Welcome to Shooter's Corner, your program for conversation on guns, shooting, and your Second Amendment rights. Brought to you by Price RV, Auto Trim Design, by Rogers Auto Repair, and by Frontier Outfitters. Now, your host, Chuck Indereeden.
Hi, welcome, listeners. You're here with Chuck Indereeden in Shooter's Corner here in the great city of Fairbanks, Alaska. It is currently the S word outside. Not that one you're probably thinking of, but the snow word. And it's kind of been building up and everything, so please, once again, drive safe. Watch those intersections because they're pretty slick. I know we've had a couple of them where people are sliding through and, like, banging into other people, but it's not rumper stomper bumper cars out there. So also do everybody else a favor. Please drive with your headlights on, like I always say. Once again, you're here with the KFAR, 97.5, 660 AM. If you missed last week's show when we had Captain Eric Spitzer on there talking about the Fairbanks Community Food Bank, it was quite a hoot. You can always go to our archives at kfarradio.com. Scroll down on the right-hand side. You'll see Shooter's Corner with Chuck Indereeden. Click on that link. Scroll down past my bio, and you'll find all of the shows archived there. Teresa does an excellent job of making sure they get up in a timely manner for us, and she'll archive today's show as well. All right, couple announcements. First, let's start our show. A well-regulated militia, being necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. Apparently, some people don't understand what that word means.
Sadly.
Yeah, I know. So, North Pole PD is going to be at the Three Bears in North Pole on Saturday. You probably saw your Alaska State Troopers at Costco this last weekend. What was that? Friday, Saturday, Sunday, they were there taking donations for our Fairbanks Community Food Bank, which is a great program, to be quite honest with you. I know they still need like 2,000 turkeys. There's still a bunch of food that they need because, quite honestly, in addition to the regular people that they feed for Thanksgiving, I think we're going to have some federal employees and military and everybody else that'll probably be over there looking for food as well for this Thanksgiving. So please find it within your heart to donate. And also just remember, you can always donate cash as well. That converts to food, gives you the food bank an opportunity to buy food. And then also look at different community or organizations you have within the community and go over there and donate your time to pack these food boxes as well. I know Cindy's going to be going over there this afternoon with some of her friends, packing food boxes, and also our Rotary is going to be going over there on November 25th to pack. So, yeah, get out and join in with the community and help out. We have a lot of people that are in need this year as well because, as I always say, our elected representatives, not leaders, can't pull their head out of their third point of contact.
Guess we'll pay attention next election.
No, they won't. There's actually a saying that I looked up. There's actually a saying I looked up. And it actually went back to, all the way back, believe it or not, to the Babylonians. And it was essentially the more modernized verb. So in 39, 6th century, it says, "From and within the forest comes the axe to it, as the handle for the axe that chops the tree is from the forest itself." What do you think that translates to into modern?
Tell us, please.
Oh, please.
Please.
With bated breath. Right? It literally translates to that one saying that people are now putting out there now, that the forest was shrinking, but the trees kept voting for the axe because its handle was made of wood and they thought it was one of them. There's New York.
Oh, God.
Yeah.
Yeah, we won't talk about that.
So anyways, for today's show, we got Miss Cindy, Miss Boise Bell hanging out with us today. We have
Good
Matt,
morning.
As always, our juggernaut, people that we can, like, pick on.
I'll take it.
Yeah. Good morning, Matt.
Good morning, everybody. And then we also have our special guest on today. Well, it's almost like a Stammtisch, which is a German word for regular.
Regular.
Yeah. Stomp. Have you ever been to Germany?
Yes, I lived there for 5 years of my life.
All right, so you know what Stammtisch is when you go into like a pub or a bar or a guest house. Mm-hmm. That's what they would be.
Yeah,
and you see like a sign on the table that says Stammtisch. That's where the regulars sat.
Amen.
You have a Stammtisch sign in front of you. You just don't realize it.
Thank you.
All right, cool. Yeah, we have Colonel Montana Kid Hammer with us today, and so we're going to be discussing some firearm stuff. But I got to read my editorial for today. So Shut down, lock down, safeguarding your gun rights when Washington shuts down. In the chaotic world of Washington politics, where fiscal brinkmanship has become as predictable as the seasons, one group of Americans consistently bears the burden: law-abiding gun owners. Government shutdowns, though self-inflicted wounds caused by partisan gridlock, don't just delay paychecks for federal workers or shut down national parks. They halt essential services that support our Second Amendment rights, leaving hunters, sports shooters, and self-defense advocates in limbo. But a new piece of legislation aims to change that, and it's about time we support it. Introduced, the Firearms Access During Shutdowns Act, recently championed by Senator Jim Risch, Republican from Idaho.
Idaho!
In the Senate. And Representative Ben Klein, Republican from Virginia, in the House. Senate Bill 3085 and House Bill 5874. So you can look those up. This clear bill acknowledges a simple truth. Exercising your constitutional right to bear arms shouldn't be sacrificed in D.C.'s budget fights. Currently, when appropriations lapse, non-essential federal functions grind to a halt. This includes vital operations at the FBI and ATF, such as processing background checks through the National Instant Criminal Background Check System. Without these, firearm transfers and purchases come to halt, even for those who have followed all the rules. We've seen this play out before. During the 2018-2019 shutdown, the longest in U.S. history, delays in NICS checks rippled through gun shops and ranges nationwide, frustrating dealers and buyers alike. And it's not just about buying a new rifle for deer season. It's about timely approval for suppressors under the National Firearms Act, import permits for collectors, and even federal firearms licenses for businesses. These bottlenecks aren't mere inconveniences. They're direct infringements on our freedoms, punishing everyday folks for Congress's inability to pass a budget on time. I like to say they only have one job.
Amen. I think they take more vacation. And you know the sad thing is, when they retire, they're going to have full medical. Look at what people pay for medical. They pay an outrageous amount a month, but...
Don't even think about that, Cindy. Think about people like Nancy Pelosi, who have been...
Well, she's like embalmed already anyway.
She's been in Congress since...
Christ was a corporal.
Yeah, I think before that. The problem is, if you look at a lot of these politicians that are around her age, older than Sin, and you look at their net worth, it should not be as high as it is. I want to say the latest figures that came out on Nancy Pelosi is she's estimated to be worth over, I think it was $134 million.
Yeah. And that's only because her husband does trades.
Yeah, it's all
proxy.
Well,
let's not digress.
Yeah.
Let's finish this up real quick. We'll get back to that subject later. The Firearms Access During Shutdowns Act cuts through this nonsense by designating a specific operations as essential during any funding lapse. It explicitly covers the NICS systems at the FBI, including its support for ATF's enforcement programs and services, the ATF's directorate authority, our directorate itself, export licensing at the Commerce Department's Bureau of Industry and Security, and similar activities at the State Department's Directorate of Defense Trade Controls. By tying all these emergency provisions under federal law, the bill ensures that employees handling them are accepted and can keep working no matter the shutdown drama. Why does this matter? Because the Second Amendment isn't a fair weather right. It's a cornerstone of American liberty, enshrined to protect against tyranny and ensure personal security. When political squabbles in Washington effectively disarm citizens by stalling legal processes, it's not just bureaucratic red tape. It's an assault on the Constitution. Supporters like the National Rifle Association have rightly applauded this move, noting that shutdown shouldn't shut down our rights. And with co-sponsors including Senator Bill Cassidy, Republican from Louisiana, the bill is gaining traction among those who understand that government dysfunction shouldn't come at the expense of the people. Of course, critics might argue this prioritizes guns over other services, but that's missing the point. This isn't about favoritism. It's about consistency. If air traffic controllers and border agents are deemed essential for safety, why not the mechanisms that allow responsible Americans to protect themselves? Public safety demands that criminals don't get a free pass while law-abiding are left high and dry. As we head into another potential budget showdown, because let's face it, they're inevitable, it's crucial for gun owners to make their voices heard. Contact your representatives, urge them to back this bill, and remind them that the Second Amendment doesn't take a vacation just because Congress can't get its act together. The Firearms Access During Shutdowns Act isn't radical. It's reasonable. It's about locking in our rights, even when Washington locks up. For shooters, hunters, and freedom lovers everywhere, this is worth winning. And we got to go into our first break. All right. Let's hit our first break. Stay tuned. When we come back, we're going to talk about this week's in firearm history, because it's actually kind of interesting what I pulled up about gunpowder. Like, that was pretty wild. First, like, attempted terrorist attack. But anyways, we'll be right back. Chuck, Cindy, myself, and, oh, yeah, I did say myself. Anyways, Colonel Montana Kid Hammer. We'll be right back. Shooter's Corner, 97.5, 660 AM.
Alaska is new every season. Fall and winter bring new sporting opportunities for grouse, ptarmigan, and other small game hunting. Predator calling and trapping, snowshoeing, and winter camping. Gear up for success at Frontier Outfitters for traps, snares, and calls, guns, and ammunition. You'll stay warm and dry with the right clothing and rest easy with tents, sleeping bags, and camp necessities. Just downstairs, you'll find ATV and snow machine accessories and Sentry Hardware. For every season, there's Frontier Outfitters for your Alaskan lifestyle.
Who turned out the lights? It's lighting season in Alaska, and you don't want to be left in the dark. At Auto Trim Design, we carry a wide variety of Moose lights from Vision X and Baja Designs, Tiny Monster LED headlights, and backup lighting to keep your path bright. Your safety is important to us. Drive with clarity and peace of mind with Moose lights professionally installed. Stop by Auto Trim Design today and let us design the right package that fits your needs. Auto Trim Design's philosophy hasn't changed in over 40 years. We treat every customer the Alaska way, with honesty, integrity, and respect.
Hey North Pole Fairbanks, it's Preston with family-owned and operated Price RV. Winter's knocking. Is your RV ready? Bring it to us at Price RV. We'll protect your RV's water system against frozen, cracked water lines. Have us winterize your rig now and receive a free roof inspection. Prevent those small leaks from becoming expensive problems next spring. We take care of your rig and treat it like one of our own. Get winter ready. Give us a call now. Price RV in North Pole.
KFAR weather.
Slight chance of snow today. Otherwise, cloudy skies expected. Daytime highs approaching 18. Southeasterly winds around 5 miles per hour. Cloudy skies expected again tonight. Slight chance for snow. Lows dip down to about 12. About an inch of snow tonight through tomorrow. And that's your weather on KFAR 660 AM and 97.5 FM. I'm meteorologist Jennifer Wojcicki.
And now back to Shooter's Corner on KFAR Radio.
Welcome. Am I back? Testing. Never really wanted to do that. But man, when I don't hear myself back through my earphones, like, I don't know if, like, Teresa's got me back powered back up or something like that, or if she's just playing a joke on me.
I told her to shut you down.
Did you really?
No.
This sounds like something you would do.
No.
All right. So, already, just went through my editorial and stuff like that. If you missed it, I'm telling you what, go back and listen to it, because it is powerful enough that you need to call your representatives. Cool. All right. If you have any questions or complaints, like, no, really, I'm not going to listen to your complaints anyways. But you can always call in. Ask.
You're full of spice. You're drinking a smart water today? Or what do you, spice water?
No, this is just the alkaline water from Kirkland, so who knows what's in it.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Good old made in the USA. Bottles made in plastic in China, probably.
Hey, Chuck.
Yeah.
I did find something out when I was on in my adventure in Texas. I found out they do make socks for horses.
Did you talk to her, Matt?
I have not said a word to Cindy.
I have not talked to Matt. I almost texted Matt this morning on your phone, but then I got...
Well, we have our Shooter's Corner Consortium group chat.
Yeah, I was enjoying the wonderful blueberry pancakes I was trying to eat.
That I made for you.
Yes, you did. No, but they do. There is definitely family now. They've got, let me see. There are socks. There are socks. I know, airtime. There are socks for horses, and they're compression socks. They're not like human socks, but they're compression socks, and they're a little bigger. Not as big as things in Texas. No.
Okay.
But they are big.
I could see that, actually. Especially with those millions of dollar horses that they have, like running the Kentucky Derby and stuff like that. I could see how a compression sock would probably help.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. All right. Well, thank you for that little tidbit, Not. All right.
You're welcome.
Hey, if you have any further questions about Cindy's socks, call it a 458.
I wear a lot of workout booty socks. 458-8255.
They're copper reinforced. Helps the energy, your energy aurora or whatever. Is it aurora? No, the aurora's in the sky.
You want your legs aura. To feel good aura. Like horses. Wear nice compression socks.
Yeah, that. Whatever. All right. Hey, so this week in firearm history, back in November 5th of 1605. Let's go way back. There was actually a gunpowder plot that was foiled in England, all right? So there was a group of Catholic conspirators, including a guy named Guy Fawkes. He planned to assassinate King James I by exploding 36 barrels of gunpowder under the House of Lords. I was like, what? Like, this is like a terrorist attack or something like that, right? Let's see. The plot was discovered just in time, leading to Fawkes' arrest and the group's execution. This failed act of terrorism using gunpowder, the key ingredient in all early firearms, highlighted the explosive potential of black powder beyond guns. It led to stricter laws on explosives and commemorated, this is the funny part, an annual event known as Guy Fawkes Night, which they celebrated with bonfires and fireworks. Only the Brits could come up with that. Then they'll ban it, and then, you know, oh, got it. So Guy Fawkes Night, also known as Bonfire Night or Fireworks Night, is an annual British observance held on November 5th to commemorate the failure of the gunpowder plot in 1605. Let's see. Traditions. Modern observance, while rooted in anti-Catholic sentiment, historically today it's largely a secular family event focused on fireworks displays, food like toffee, apples, and community gatherings, especially in the UK. It's less observed outside of Britain, but has influenced global perceptions of Fawkes as a symbol of rebellion. Wow, whatever. Don't care. All right, Colonel Kid Montana. Or Montana Kid Hammer. Or Hammer the Kid.
Okay, here we go.
So what we're going to talk about today is the M1 carbine, right? Because I thought this was pretty interesting because this kind of segues into some of the other stuff that we have talked about in the past. We've covered the firearms from the Texas Rangers. We've talked about some of the stuff that was used in World War II. But to specifically talk about the M1 carbine and then how that evolved, it's a development history, tactics, and employment. So 30 cal, specifically developed by the 1940s by Winchester. Gave our ground troops a lightweight semi-automatic.
Yeah, it sure did. And like I said, as they were developed and gotten into the field, of course, personnel that in the line of combat could carry them, oftentimes officers, at all. And not to say lieutenants or captains as if, you know, they're too lowly. It's just the fact that in their places in platoons and companies, it was a very valuable firearm with, 15 mags later on, 30 as we, get into Korea. But it becomes more or less of the rear echelons type of firearm, the cooks, the command post, radio men and things like that, that M1 Grands would maybe be too wieldy. Plus, those are more or less precious in the hands of the troops on the front line who are giving up their, O3s and their Enfields, 17 Enfields. And also, it really is that go-between. I had thought that actually it had been derived from a pistol cartridge, and I'm doing some research back to about 30 years ago on something that I read, but again, I can't verify that as such. But the 30 caliber carbine is that niche, and I like the your question was 30 caliber versus what? I actually, it's a question I would love to put out to our listeners, versus what in their mind, what do they think is, that other, German firearm, Japanese firearm, Italian firearm, with that war, or, what else is in our inventory that could be 30 caliber? Or what? So I'm hoping perhaps listeners out there, would say, but I know. So go ahead and call in. Meanwhile, we'll keep chatting.
That's actually just a typo. That worked out to be a pretty good question.
No, actually,
I'm going to fill out the rest of that statement right there. Yeah. M1 carbine, 30 caliber versus what? And then didn't go back to
it. I think I interrupted you during that time.
But that worked out well.
Yeah.
Because literally, like what?
What? Like,
but we do know this. It's an intermediate cartridge, though, so it wasn't made for long range like the M1 Garand. Yeah,
not main battle
which
rifle.
Which is shooting like a... Right, it's not a main battle rifle, so it's kind of like that one that maybe the platoon leader would carry around or a squad leader or something like that. Maybe a squad automatic rifleman at that time or maybe even for some type of CQB stuff, right? We knew that. The tankers were always carrying around their M3 grease gun. We talked about that in a previous show.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Which shoot a 45 caliber with, what, a 30-round freaking magazine on it, too. What's interesting, though, is that cartridge actually evolved from the 32 Winchester self-loading round. So it was actually rimless as well, as opposed to the 30-06 cartridge, which was rim. And it had around a 1990 feet-per-second muzzle velocity with only a 110-grain bullet. Cindy doesn't probably remember this, but her and I went to some instructor development classes down at Thunder Ranch, and it was funny because we were staying at the cabin there on Clinton Heidi's property when they owned it back then. And anyways, they were like, hey, do you have a rifle? Like, no, I just have my handguns. That's what we brought for the class. And then Clint was like, got into one of the thousands of safes that he had there, pulls out an M1 carbine, right? And was like, here's a magazine. Here's a rifle. Load and make ready. So I load and made ready, plays it on safe. He's like, all right, keep that down there at the cabin. If I hear it go off, you're my early warning.
<You know? laughs> I do remember that.
Yeah, so we kept it in the cabin with us down there and stuff. And I was like, oh, all right, sounds good. Like, if I fire, then Clint knows that crap has hit the fan.
They're wonderful people. They're one that you could sit and talk to all day long.
Yeah. So also what's interesting is they actually took that – because you alluded to earlier that you thought it was originally a pistol cartridge, too.
Right.
It did become a pistol cartridge.
Yeah, it would become one.
Yeah, in the Ruger Blackhawk revolver in the 1960s and other experimental revolvers in 1944, they took that cartridge and put it in a handgun.
Mm-hmm.
I guess because it was low enough power. Yeah. If you think about it, 110-grain bullet is pretty low compared to a 9mm 115-grain practice round.
Yeah.
I mean, even our duty rounds are 147 grain.
Right.
You know, other self-defense rounds are 124 grain. So that's a pretty light projectile if you think about it. But
and kind of on a side note to it, companies like Underwood, Quality Hardware, IBM, which I had an IBM.
Did you really?
And then Winchester's, it put Americans to work manufacturing these firearms, although the claim was that it was low on stopping power and its accuracy was in question. But again, if your rear echelon people were being overrun, chances are, it would be a few yards. It'd be 10 yards that you'd mm-hmm. be maintaining combat, and that would be quicker to swing into battle than in something main battle rifle.
Right.
And all, I know, there was this, it was divided in Korea among those who just absolutely loved it and those who absolutely hated it.
Yeah. All right, we got a caller.
Okay.
And we got 2 minutes.
Got 2 minutes.
2 minute warning. All right, caller, you're here with Chuck, Matt, Cindy, and Colonel Montana, the Hammer Kid. The Kid Hammer. I like that better. It was like a hammer shark.
We still got to come up with a name for you.
Well, the M1 carbine was supposed to take the place of the 45 handgun for the rims, for the clerks and
right.
And compared to the 45, it doesn't have any stopping power. But you're a lot better off with a gun you can hit with than you are one that you miss with. And well, that was the theory.
Because accuracy does count in a gunfight.
You betcha.
Contrary to popular belief.
I thought accuracy was overrated.
Yeah, it's not overrated.
It's a pop gun, but if you compare it to the 45 ACP, well, you can hit with the thing.
Right, especially absolutely. With a stock. I mean, and there was modifications to the 45 ACP as well. I mean, to the 1911 to put a stock on it, if you remember those.
You could have done that, but talk about something that's fragile. for a lineman or a tanker or a paratroopers love the carbine.
Yeah, the folding spot.
Yeah, they had a folding spot of the M1A1 variant. Yep,
thank you.
Yeah, absolutely. You. And apparently they also put infrared scopes on these later.
Yeah.
So you had like anywhere from a 70 to a 100-yard range.
When we come back from the break, let me tell you about hunting that I did with an M1 carbine once.
Oh, wow.
Well, it's a 30 caliber, so I mean, it's almost like a 30-30 lever action, right? I mean, you could do the same thing, so. But... All right. Drawbacks included limited penetration. We already talked about that against cover, so users often paired it with grenades or prolonged or avoided prolonged firefights. Excellent in fluids, close quarters, like I alluded to earlier, that whole CQB kind of world. So probably worked better when we got into the villages and the towns in Germany. Yeah. Especially.
Yes.
You know. So, all right, stay tuned. When we come back, we're going to continue on this conversation with Colonel Montana Kid Hammer, Matt, Boise Bell, and myself. There, I got it right that time. Stay tuned. We'll be right back here. Shooter's Corner.
From the Satellite West Studio, satellite-based voice communications, you're listening to KFAR Radio. 97.5.
Fox News, I'm John Saucier. President Trump in the Oval Office today urging the Supreme Court to rule in his favor when it comes to tariffs.
The decision in the Supreme Court would be devastating to our country if we got a negative. Devastating. We got a negative decision.
Well, the president speaking as he announced a deal with two major companies to lower the price of weight loss drugs. The Supreme Court heard oral arguments Wednesday concerning the legality of the president's tariffs. This government shutdown now with 37 days. Lawmakers still have not passed a spending bill in the Senate. House Minority Whip Catherine Clark calling the GOP to meet with Democrats and find a deal.
Republicans are hiding out when they should be here governing.
The House has been out of session since before the shutdown began. Republicans want the government reopened at current funding levels. They say the current bill is nonpartisan. America's listening to Fox News.
It's time for your Alaska News Minute.
Alaska's news source reports the Department of Homeland Security is expediting $1 million in upfront FEMA funding for the recovery efforts in the wake of former Typhoon Halong. The funding will be immediately accessible and will be used to make temporary repairs to infrastructure or utilities and staffing emergency operations, according to a press release from the DHS. As of Monday, the release says 147 FEMA staff are deployed to Bethel and Anchorage to support disaster relief operations. Additionally, following the flooding, the U.S. Coast Guard air crews have rescued 34 people and helped evacuate 28 from a temporary shelter, according to the department. FEMA is moving at an unprecedented speed to provide Alaska with immediate support that it needs to recover from this tragedy, said DHS Assistant Secretary Tricia McLaughlin. Survivors can apply for FEMA assistance by calling the Alaska Call Center, also visiting a disaster assistance center, or going online, according to DHS.
Streaming live online at KFAR660.com.
What does it look like when your faithful friend in the driveway has an off day? Well, it looks like no fun, like bumming a ride to work, the store, rescheduling lunch with your yoga instructor, all because your four-wheeled pal is waiting for parts. We do our own routine maintenance, but our chariot depends on us to schedule that for them. Airboat and inboard service too. Family owned and operated, keeping Fairbanks on the road since 1967. Rogers Auto Repair.
Hey North Pole Fairbanks, it's Preston with family owned and operated Price RV. Winter's knocking. Is your RV ready? Bring it to us at Price RV. We'll protect your RV's water system against frozen, cracked water lines. Have us winterize your rig now and receive a free roof inspection. Prevent those small leaks from becoming expensive problems next spring. We take care of your rig and treat it like one of our own. Get winter ready. Give us a call now. Price RV in North Pole.
Ben here at Auto Trim Design. Summer is moving down the road, and that means it's time to start getting ready for winter. At Auto Trim Design, we have something for everyone. Get your remote start with drone mobile, moose lights, heated seats, seat covers, tonneau covers, toppers, WeatherTech floor liners, and more before the snow flies. Auto Trim Design is your one-stop shop for all your vehicle accessory needs, located at 2550 South Cushman Street under the huge American flag. Stop in or give us a call at 456-8400.
Customized by Auto Trim.
And now back to Shooter's Corner on KFAR Radio.
Welcome back, listeners. You're here with Chuck Indereen at Shooter's Corner at the KFAR Studios in Fairbanks, Alaska. Always listen to us at 97.5, 660, not the 666 AM. Not that channel. That would be a totally different world. But nonetheless, you can also always go to KFARradio.com. I got something else on my mind right now. I just got to say it. Welcome back, listeners. You're here with Chuck Boise Bell, Curl Kid Montana, and the Jugger Matt.
All right, here we go.
Take it on the chin.
The Jugger Matt is in the house. All right, cool. All right, so during World War II, this is what actually was amazing to me. The Lend-Lease program. Mm-hmm. Like, we Lend-Leased a lot of stuff to help, like, fuel our, what do you want to call that, the military-industrial
military-industrial complex?
Complex, yeah. We were even doing it back in World War I, World War II. Yeah. So there's actually a statute over there next to the courthouse for the aircraft that we were flying from Ladd Field back then overseas to the Russians, giving them aircraft. Right. What else do we have going on? We'll talk about this rifle here in a minute, but what else did we have? You said earlier we were giving trucks to somebody else.
Yeah, to the Soviets. We sent them, like deuce and a halfs, and conveyance. Now, not that they didn't have their own, but they couldn't produce near enough for what they needed. Just about anything they needed, in machinery, they got in some manner or fashion. Right. Yeah, because when they were invaded, by the Nazis, they had to push back and rebuild plants, and that shut down production for a time. And of course, the war didn't shut down while this was going on. But
whereas we didn't have that interruption in our industrial base because nobody was coming over here and attacking us.
We would provide prior to the war. We would provide British with destroyers. As well, so they could do their convoy to do their portion of the convoy, right. and also it was amazing what we did in Lend-Lease on top of everything we produced for ourselves. As such, the P-39 is the airplane that we think of, but they also had P-40s as well.
Notice I skipped the P-38.
Yeah. Well, we didn't send them that. Oh, okay. I see what you're talking about. Okay, so, there we go.
I know we didn't send them.
I still have a P-38 hanging on a dog tag chain.
Do you really?
Yeah. Yeah. Probably one of the originals out of a C-Rat box.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah. So during World War II, the British military did not have a domestically designed semi-automatic rifle or carbine as a standard-issued personal defense weapon, right, a PDW, instead relying on their old bolt-action rifles like the Lee Enfield for infantry and submachine guns like the Sten for close quarters. However, the personal defense, particularly among officers, commandos, airborne troops, and support personnel, they adopted the Browning high-power semi-automatic pistol and also made use of the American-supplied M1 carbines via the Lend-Lease.
Mm-hmm.
That's amazing. We got another caller. Caller here with Chuck, the Matt the Juggernaut, Boise Bell, and Colonel the Kid Montana Hammer. Like, I totally screwed that up. Go ahead, listener, what you got?
Randy.
Hello, Mr. Randy.
You're referring to the statue commemorating the Lend-Lease that's over there by the courthouse.
On yes, sir.
The south side of the river there. And you also mentioned that about the C-39, and the statue has a big replica of the three-bladed prop of the P-39 and also the nose cannon sticking through the propeller cone. And my little quiz question is, do you know what the size of that cannon is?
Big.
Should be 37 millimeter.
That's right. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Goodbye.
That was my tip, 37 millimeter. I just said big. Yeah. You right in. Drove you right into that. Perfect segue. 37 mic.
I think we're getting squished out of the room.
With what, my ego?
Yes.
Okay.
All right, so anyways, the not British design, the U.S. M1 carbine was supplied in large numbers. Over 150,000 units was what was sent over to the British and the Commonwealth forces starting in 1942. So they served as a PDW for tank crews, artillerymen, drivers, paratroopers who needed something lighter than the Enfield rifle, which was a beast. That thing weighed like 14 pounds.
If it didn't, it should have. Honestly.
Yeah, it was like walnut, oak, and then steel.
Yeah, great cartridge, but yes, it weighed more than you'd want to lug for something its size.
Right. And so we shot the 30-06. What were they, 303 British?
Yeah, they had 303 British.
Yeah. See, I knew that off the top of my head.
Yeah. If you'd like, I'll pick up with where we went before the break. I made mention in Korea, it was a love-hate relationship. There were those who loved it and those who disliked it. One of the loves was because it was easy to handle, so on and so forth. And our adversaries, the Chinese, were bringing them to us. We had given them to the Chinese during the Second World War, and the communists were bringing them back. So if you could get your hands on one and you had ammo, you had it. But the people that disliked them was...
Hold on. I got to break into that, please. Like, what do you mean they were bringing them back? On the battlefield?
Yeah, back on the battlefield.
Using them back against us.
Against
us. Is that something we were traditionally doing anyways? Remember all that steel that we sold to the Japanese and then they returned it in favor in bombs?
Well, you know, we gave Chiang Kai-shek's, we gave Chiang Kai-shek's military, you know, BRs, you know, all of these firearms, 1911s and everything. And so when that regime fell and the communists took over, they had all these American firearms.
So we have a history of stupidity. Look at Afghanistan right now.
You're being very kind, yes.
All the crap we left.
But again, there were those who disliked it because they would find a Chinese soldier dead, shot dead by a M1 Grand, and find projectiles in the clothing of the Chinese, the quilted clothing of the dead Chinese, which reminds me of a hunting trip I first did. When I was a wee little tyke.
You weren't with Dick Cheney, were you?
Not yet.
Okay. I thought you were going to talk about how the pellets got stuck in your vest.
I was kind of a short little thing, and people like to hand me long rifles, and I kept getting knocked on my bottom. So as I got older in my teens, I didn't like shooting rifles. So when I bought my first rifle, I bought an M1 carbine. So a friend of mine in southeast Montana invites me to go out antelope hunting, and I take an M1 carbine out antelope hunting. When we spotted the herd, they were probably 50 yards away. By the time we got out and I got my shot, they were about 70 yards. I took the left rear leg off of a doe. She left the herd, and when she most of the time they go over fences, but she couldn't, so she tried to go under, and that's when I shot her in the head. But again, my friend Roger, who had invited me, said, boy, if you hadn't got her, she might have got away, or I'd had her shoot her, because you didn't bring a real rifle. I brought a knife to a gunfight, so to speak. So, yes, be careful when you hunt with M1 carbines.
I got to think that it's almost the same. Well, I wonder what the ballistic comparisons would be with like a 30-30, though.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
I would think that probably not.
Don't you look that up there, Jugger Matt?
That is what I'm doing right now.
Yeah, not quite the same thing. For muzzle velocity might have been relatively close, but downrange, you're just not going to have the kinetic energy release. You're not going to have the penetration and all. Like I said, fortunately.
Well, you know, those quilted uniforms that the Chinacom were wearing back then anyways were made of silk.
Mm-hmm.
Like silk threading and stuff like that. That is an amazingly strong, like, what is it, like almost five times, like as strong as steel.
Yes.
I was watching this documentary where they actually mated like silkworms with spiders.
We got tired of hearing the news. So we
got tired of listening to the news and about New York and all that other crap. So we turned on this like National Geographic thing, and they actually like had DNA crossed over with these spiders, and they were able to make spider silk. That's almost like 20 times stronger than steel per pound.
For fitness clothing.
Yeah.
They use it in fitness clothing, ballistic vest, all that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. So when they were making those vests, it's amazing that like even a 30 caliber, because of that lower velocity, not penetrating.
Yeah.
But you smack them with an M1 Grand.
Well, and think about it. When it's 30, 40, 50 below the density of the air, I mean, that will get your attention. This book talks about that just amazingly. That's why
The Chosen?
What's that book?
Yeah. This is the Last Stand of Fox Company. And it is. It's about Fox Company that holds the pass open. At the Chosen Reservoir.
Frozen Chosen.
Yeah, it's a phenomenal. I had a really good friend that was an Echo, I guess it was Easy Company back in the day. Yeah. But this is a good read. But they talk about you could tell how cold it was by the snap of the round running through 20 below, 30 below, 40 below, 50 below, and that slows a bullet down. You know, maybe not enough to so the Chinese adversary noticed it, but it does make a difference on top of their silk clothing at all.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Besides the fact that you couldn't fire your gun because your fingers were freaking frozen.
Well, that, and you get the least little bit of ice, you know, a little snow crumble falls in your M1 Grand and you don't shoot it right away. It freezes. You know, in fact, they were ordered every once in a while to slap their uprights to make sure that their bolts weren't frozen, because you didn't need to pop up and pull the trigger and didn't go. Yeah.
Well, cool. We about ready to go into our last break? Awesome. Let's go into our last break, and when we come back, we're going to continue on this conversation about the uniqueness of the M1 carbines and how they were used and everything, because not only were they used in Korea, but they were also used in Vietnam.
Yes.
It's amazing. Okay, stay tuned with us here, myself, Chuck. Boise Bell, Colonel Kid Montana, Kid Hammer. Yeah, I'm going to continue to screw that up for some reason today. And Matt the Jaeger Matt. All right, we'll be right back.
Alaska is new every season. Fall and winter bring new sporting opportunities for grouse, ptarmigan, and other small game hunting. Predator calling and trapping, snowshoeing, and winter camping. Gear up for success at Frontier Outfitters for traps, snares, and calls, guns, and ammunition. You'll stay warm and dry with the right clothing and rest easy with tents, sleeping bags, and camp necessities. Just downstairs, you'll find ATV and snow machine accessories and Sentry Hardware. For every season, there's Frontier Outfitters for your Alaskan lifestyle.
Auto Trim Design has a variety of CompuStar remote starts available that are compatible with Drone Mobile, giving you the option to start your vehicle from your smart device. Ask about their proximity unlock feature that lets you unlock your vehicle as you walk up to it. No more searching for your keys while you're juggling groceries or school supplies. Auto Trim Design has been installing remote starts for almost 30 years. They're reliable, trustworthy, and stand by their work. As Ben says, we'll be here when the other guys are gone.
Hey, North Pole Fairbanks, it's Preston with family-owned and operated Price RV. Winter's knocking. Is your RV ready? Bring it to us at Price RV. We'll protect your RV's water system against frozen, cracked water lines. Have us winterize your rig now and receive a free roof inspection. Prevent those small leaks from becoming expensive problems next spring. We take care of your rig and treat it like one of our own. Get winter ready. Give us a call now. Price RV in North Pole.
KFAR Weather.
Cloudy today with a slight chance of snow. High of 18, southeast winds around 5 miles per hour. Slight chance for snow tonight. Lows level off around 12. Cloudy skies tomorrow. Chance for snow. Daytime highs approaching 19. About an inch of snow tonight through tomorrow. And that's your weather on KFAR 660 AM and 97.5 FM. I'm meteorologist Laura Lockwood.
And now back to Shooter's Corner on KFAR Radio.
All right, welcome back, listeners. You're here with Chuck, Cindy, Miss Boise Bell, Matt, and Colonel
Montana Kid Hammer.
Everyone's here.
Colonel Montana Kid Hammer. Where's my notes? Anyways, we were talking about the M1 carbine, and we kind of went through the history of it with the Lend-Lease, with the British, and then also in World War II. We had a brief discussion about it with, where's that note page? About it with during the Korean War. One of the things we were talking about on the break, though, was the fact that you had one that was manufactured by IBM.
In 1943.
Was it the Curity model?
No. A regular line, you know, and I know where we're going with that. And what was neat about it, when I bought it for like $185 at a gun show in
was
Tucson.
This like in 72?
No, this was in 87.
Wow.
And I took it into a gun shop where the owner was a World War II veteran. And he had a coworker named Ken that was from the Korean War, and all. In fact, he came with the Air Force. He left the Army and went into the Air Force. And I wanted them to get me a bayonet lug and the more modern rear sight. And he said, "Well, if you want to, we'll do it and we'll install it and everything. But you have an original World War II that somehow didn't get into the armories between World War II and Korea and get a lot of these upgrades. Like I had the punch button safety and punch button mag release. Well, the thing about the punch button safety was guys would reach up to knock the safety off, and they would really safe the weapon. They'd knock the ammunition out. They'd punch the mag release.
Right.
And then it wouldn't go. And, yeah, you know, so the military.
So was the push buttons, were they like typewriter keys?
Not quietly. No. The punch button for the safety was just a regular round, you know, a round button.
Yeah.
And then the
from,
mag
from
release.
The letter S of the typewriter.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. And M was the mag release.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So they were modified. So I would sell it in time for considerably more than I paid for it.
Yeah.
And everything,
you know, we have a thing within the AST called it's like a 1301 program, where National Guard units or whatever like that can loan, or it's not really a lease, but it's like loan like military stuff to the troopers or whatever. So back in the day, I remember seeing an M16, right?
Mm-hmm.
Literally, it was. Taken back out of, obviously, it wasn't a select fire anymore. It's like it wasn't fully automatic, but you could see where the pinhole was still in the lower receiver and stuff. And you flipped it around, and it said manufactured by Goodyear.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, they weren't all Colts. Yeah.
They were not all Colts. Kind of like the whole M1 Garand thing. Mm-hmm. We're not all, yeah. Like, who was the original designer of these things?
Well, John C. Garand, or what? But Winchester manufactured them,
right? Because I'm seeing that it could be General Motors,
yeah.
IBM, as you alluded to.
International. Oh, I'm sorry, not M1 Garand, but M1 Carbines.
Right.
Yeah. And like I said, Winchester, Underwood, the typewriter company, Quality Hardware, and I'll be honest, I don't know who Quality Hardware actually was.
Well,
and
apparently
IBM.
They made Quality Hardware.
Yep. And, you know, to the tune of Lend-Lease.
Right. So I wonder if some of these off companies were the ones that were sent overseas as well, or were we, like, seeing these on the battlefield here as well? Like your IBM, I wonder if, like, that just didn't make it into the, I wonder, like, say, the supply system for the front lines,
yeah.
Because maybe it was part of a Lend-Lease, like, all right, you guys manufacture these for the export world.
Right.
And so we don't care if the safety... Yeah. Doesn't work with them because by the way, they might be used against us later on. Let's let them screw that up.
Yeah, well, you know, interesting. You know, a little change of course was the M1 Grand that I had gotten. I had I was on a rifle team at Davis-Monthan, and we all ordered them. And for whatever reason, my paperwork got held up, so I wouldn't get mine for a year. And when it came from the CMP, I got. An armory queen. It had no wear marks. It had...
Still in Cosmoline?
No, it actually had been cleaned, but
wow.
It had been in an armory, but it had never been issued. I believe it was out of New York, state armory in New state of New York. But and everybody else go like, oh, geez, I see who you are now. And I said, I was the one that was made to wait an extra year.
Yeah, that's what happens.
Mm-hmm.
Good things come to those who wait.
Evidently.
Yeah. So then we have, like, this thing moving into Vietnam.
Yeah. Well, with the M2s and M3 variants, you know, becoming select fire, firearms.
Right.
And all which, of course, obviously they were not originally. I had a World War II friend that I worked in a gun store with in the middle 70s, and he had an M3. And for some reason, we decided to go out as back road, no place Montana, and chop down wooden fence posts with this M3. Not responsible use of firearms, by the way. But
I think as youngsters, we've all done that kind of stupid stuff. Hey, let's see if we can chop down this tree with a 12 gauge.
Oh yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
But, you know, but my friend, of course, he was in his late 50s. He was a nose gunner on a PBY during. In fact, he graduated from the same high school I did, but he graduated in 1941 in June. Found himself in Pearl Harbor.
Oh wow.
December 7th, and since they didn't have any PBYs left, he did a lot of, you know, shore, you know, beach patrol and all. But those M3s work.
So you chop down fence posts?
Yep, and yep. Empty out a magazine. You get light fast.
Is that a 15 or a 30?
15s.
That's way too funny. All right, so let's talk about some of the tactics that they employed with these things. Obviously, because they had shorter range.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we weren't doing long-range sniping with these things, so now we have to really be the enforcer of the last 200 yards of national foreign policy. So we're getting up close and personal at this point. So not to get into another subject, but were we using our M1 Garands like in alternating fires and stuff like that? Not to get into the talking fire thing, which we want to talk about on another day, but nonetheless, like...
And again, how you engage an enemy squad or how you would ambush or whatever, mostly it was, you know, whoever could acquire targets fired, and then that would help the others, you know, chime in. And, of course, when that clip spooned out and somebody had to load it, and again...
But that's more on the M1 Garand, though.
Yeah.
We get the ding, right? And then the Germans all, oh, look, he's out. And then the guy with the 30 or the M1 carbine would then jump up and like.
Definitely. And again, depending on who had them, because normally your squads or platoons, they were pretty much, especially toward the end of the war, you know, on mainland new continent of Europe, most of everybody in the Army had their M1 Garands. Even the Marines later on have them. So again, the M1 carbines are very rare to certain officers, like our one phone caller had made mention to, replaces or becomes a suitable sub for the 1911. But again, most of your rare echelon people not at the line, you know, not on the combat line, would have had them. So. And again, it's hard to say. I've never done a squad by squad or, you know, company by company comparison to, but I know the M1 Garand by then, you know, by D-Day is, you know, pretty thick.
Yeah. Why don't you look that up, Matt? What's the MTO for an M1, for a World War II squad? Because, like, my knowledge is based off of Band of Brothers and also Saving Private Ryan, right, which are great documentaries.
Yeah.
But nonetheless, like... I remember a lot of those guys were carrying the M1 carbine, but they also had several designated marksmen within their squad. Remember they had that sniper guy who was assigned to them and stuff like that as well. So,
and they were
like,
Rangers.
I could see literally a tactic would be like, okay, let's see what kind of response we get out of that tree line. Sniper dude, you watch for that response, and then I want effective fire on that, right? And so
I was actually able to pull up that MTO. So World War II typically consisted of 12 men, traditionally 11. Squad was consisted of a squad leader, a assistant squad leader, two scouts, which utilized M1 carbines, a Browning automatic rifle, BAR team, and then six riflemen.
So it makes sense that your scouts would have that smaller carbine because they got to shoot, move, and communicate a little bit quicker.
Yeah.
So now they're like sneaking and peeking and stuff like that. And then if they have to use any, because their job is not to engage the enemy.
Yeah, no.
Their job is to find and fix the enemy for major units to be able to maneuver on, right? Yeah, so that's just purely a self-defense weapon. Like they call it a PDW, a personal defense weapon.
Mm-hmm. Well, so in talking about the M1 carbine being used into Vietnam, a company called, Verbel and Psionics in the 60s actually made a suppressed 9mm M1 carbine that had a scope and a folding stock. It had 11 baffles. Each baffle was surrounded by portholes going out and then, again, integrally suppressed. But because it was so suppressed, there was not a lot of back pressure, and they were using 120-grain ammunition for 9mm, it turned into a manually fired weapon.
Yeah.
What purpose does that serve?
I don't know, but it had to have been pretty quiet.
You ain't lying. Like, it's not even cycling
no.
at that point.
Exactly. I'm not giving up my high-power pistol, my Browning high-power pistol.
Right. Okay, well, awesome. It was a great show today. I think we got a lot of good information out there and stuff like that for our listeners.
Thank you, callers.
And thank you, callers, as well. But nonetheless, hey, remember to go out and support that food drive over for North Pole PD over at Three Bears and stuff. That's a great thing for our community to support the Fairbanks Community Food Bank. If you got time, drop some stuff off for them over there. Remember our upcoming classes, 6th and 7th of December. The 7th of December, right? Pearl Harbor Day. ACHP, Alaska Concealed Handgun Permit Class over at Alaska Ammo. Go to c4traininggroup.com, sign up for that class. Great. Thank you for everybody for listening. Next week's show will be pre-recorded. pre-recorded.
Yes.
Just so you guys know. And then Thanksgiving will be pre-recorded as well. So no call-ins, but it's going to be great information. Make sure you listen in. Stay tuned. We'll be back next week.
You've been listening to Shooter's Corner on KFAR Radio. Brought to you by Price RV, Auto Trim Design, by Rogers Auto Repair, and by Frontier Outfitters. To listen back to this or any past episode, log on to KFARradio.com and click on the archive page. And thanks for listening to
KFAR 660 AM Fairbanks, K248 DK 97.5 FM Fairbanks.